Today we're going to be speaking to Dr. Michael Colgan. Dr. Michael Colgan is one of the world's most popular scientific experts in nutrition. He is a best-selling author and travels the world lecturing on anti-aging, sports nutrition, and hormonal health. Dr. Michael Colgan is here in Vancouver to attend a special keynote event coming up on behalf of the Canadian Health Food Association. And he is here today to discuss his latest new book and release and give us some insight about what he has discovered as a research scientist and as an expert working with many thousands of athletes for a very long period of time. So nice to have you with us here today, Michael.
Thank you, Corey. It's great to be back.
I guess one of the things that comes to mind, first of all, and I know that many of our listeners will be interested in this, is as a research scientist, how did you get involved in the field of fitness and sports nutrition?
I was studying essential hypertension at the University of Auckland Medical School. And one of my bright students called Grant Gillette, one of the medical students, said, "The trouble with a lot of these folk, Doc, is that they're undernourished." And that was a novel idea to us at that time. I never believed that you had to take anything special to your body in the way of food. And so we started looking at the nutrient content of foods and comparing them to what was given in the hospital, what the dietitians were giving to the patients. And we found they were abysmal, absolutely abysmal. The nutrient content of the food was terrible. So then we started supplementing the patients with vitamins and minerals. And unfortunately, you can't do that in a hospital, although many people still do those sorts of experiments, because people come to a hospital when they are at a low ebb. And most diseases fluctuate up and down. So that if the patient gets better, you can't say that it was anything that you did. In fact, much of hospital time is spent by patients just waiting for nature to take its course. And whatever the physicians do doesn't make any difference whatsoever. So we thought, okay, we'll have to start with healthy people and see if these nutrients make a difference. So we started using the university track team. And we found that if we measured the slope of improvement in their performance for 1 year, and then the slope of improvement in their performance for the next year when they were given the nutrients, there was a significant improvement. And that was a startling thing to me. I'd never taken a vitamin in my life then, and I was blown away by it. So we started to use them. And used them with the Australian swimming team in 1980, and they came back with more medals than they, people thought they should have. And there were all sorts of things floating about drugs, but I can tell you that they had no drugs in their systems. We were pretty hard on them. And then I got invited to Colorado Springs for the 1984 games, and we did the same thing there. And I suppose since then I've become notorious for it. You can use nutrients to improve performance if you know what nutrients do.
So you're convinced that optimum sports nutrition, as you coined the term, is not only essential but can be clinically demonstrated?
Certainly can, and is being so now. In between when I published the book Optimum Sports Nutrition and my new book, The Sports Nutrition Guide, Optimum Sports Nutrition was 1993. The Sports Nutrition Guide is 2002. So 9 years, there are more than 8,000 papers in medical and sports journals demonstrating that you can use nutrition to improve performance.
That's fascinating. Which leads me to my next question. Can you tell our listeners what's happening in the field right now? What are some of the most important breakthroughs that people need to know about?
Well, we are at the point of a revolution, and it's a revolution that has come about because of mainstream science. Last year, the genome was completely mapped, and instead of providing answers to a very large amount of disease, what it provided was the information that the most important thing in the human body is not the genome, but the proteins that it makes during its lifetime, and what influences the making of those proteins. And we know that it's influenced by many things, and certainly a great deal by what you put in through your mouth.
You've spoken a lot on whey protein, certainly written a lot of information on it. When you discuss the value of whey protein, and in your discussion today, you've mentioned something that maybe some of our listeners are not familiar with, and that is biological value. Would you mind commenting on that? What does that actually mean?
Right, well, there are many different scales to measure protein value or protein quality. Biological value is the most efficient because it measures the amount of nitrogen retained in the body per gram of nitrogen taken in through the mouth. And that's the more important thing. The nitrogen retention in the body is the measure of the protein and the lean tissue growth or loss.
So not all proteins are the same?
Not at all, no. They differ dramatically. So much so that our old idea of red meat protein as being the best, which is still prevalent in many sports, especially the professional sports, is completely wrong. That brings us to another part of this revolution. The revolution that is occurring, not only in sports nutrition, but in medicine in general, is a realization from the work of physicists such as Fred Hoyle in the 50s, Arthur Gamow in the 40s, John Gribben, the British astrophysicist, and many others like them, and the popular books that they've now published, we realize that the human system is made of the debris of old stars. We are made from the gas and the dust of old stars. Now that seems strange, but it's very important because the gas and the dust of old stars is composed in a certain way. And the astrophysicists call this CHON. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. CHON. And the human system...
That's C-H-O-N?
C-H-O-N.
Okay.
And that's common in physics books.
Yes.
They talk about CHON as if everybody knows what CHON is. Those four elements make up 96.5% of the human body. Now, if you don't get those right in your system, then everything else you do is not going to make it work optimally. And then you see, then you take the heavier elements after that that come, like iron and calcium and various other elements, right down to arsenic. Arsenic is an essential component of the human system, although we wouldn't put it in supplements. It would be hard to sell them. These elements totally make up 99.9% of the human body. All the vitamins, all the herbals, all the other substances make up less than 0.1%. So you can see that this has sort of stood the old vitamin, mineral, macronutrient theory on its head and said, now, first of all, we have to take care of the elements. We have to look at the way in which the body can be provided with those elements, those structural elements, in the right proportions, in the right amounts, and at the right timing to produce optimal function.
This is outstanding information. It's so fascinating and so vital to all of us. How do we apply this kind of information? Where does a person start? For example, if we have a 35 to 45-year-old individual who's deconditioned, they know they need to get into a fitness program. What advice do you have for them? Where do they start? Where do they get information? What's the best approach?
Well, one of the things... The reasons that I want to support the CHFA in Canada is your course, Corey. This certified nutrition advisor's course has got all of the elements that people need to have. Or if they go to someone who is certified through your course, they will give them all that they need to have to produce an optimal body for their genetic makeup. And that's so important. It's such an important difference to the way that we still do it today, where people read something, see something on television, go to a health food store, buy things because they happen to be the flavor of the month's nutrient, use them for a little while, drop them. They have no idea what nutrition is about. And then also you get the couch potato brigade, who think that all they have to do is put pills into their mouth and put the right food into their mouth and sit in a chair and the body will grow optimally. And we know now that the body doesn't grow like that at all. It only grows in response to stimulation. You have to stimulate the system with activity, and pretty regular and fairly intense activity, for it to grow optimally.
Well, that's a very interesting point. Now, you mentioned intense activity. Would you agree that the intensity component of exercise is greatly lacking in the exercise programs of many people?
It is, and the major reason for that is, of course, that people don't keep up exercise. So that if you could take, say, an average aerobics class, probably 50 to 60% of that class are people who have come back again and again for 3 or 4 weeks a year, or maybe twice or three times a year for 3 or 4 weeks, and they go and do their exercise for that time. They find it extremely difficult because their body's deconditioned to start with, and they drop out. They don't realize that it is the regular application of stimulation to the body that makes it grow optimally. Every day that you do not do some exercise, your body starts to decondition. And every day that it starts to decondition, it cannot make optimal use of what you put in your mouth. It's fairly simple, really.
So is this what we refer to as catabolism? These forces that dematerialize people over time, versus the opposition that we can create by creating an anabolic flux, and this is where we get into weight training. Now, how significant is weight training to you in terms of fitness?
Well, we know from I think it started with the astronauts. They did aerobic exercise in space, and they came back and they had lost a ton of muscle and they'd lost a ton of bone, and that really started people thinking, what the heck happened? Because they were exercising very regularly, every day. And then it started people realizing that when astronauts went up in space, it was like aging in a microcosm. They aged weeks and weeks for every day they were up there because of the lack of gravity, because of the lack of resistance to their movement. The body just dematerializes. The body will only maintain itself if resistance is placed in front of it, placed in front of the bones. Your bones do not grow unless there's resistance on the end of the bones to make the lattice work, spark literally, and produce new stem cells.
There's a lot of misunderstanding in the gym about how much is required, looking at volume, sets and reps, versus the intensity of exercise. Two camps, one or two sets maximum, a lot of intensity, versus the more voluminous approach, the marathon-like approach. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on volume and intensity and the concept of periodization?
Well, there's two things, Corey. First of all, people who aren't in good condition cannot go into high-intensity exercises. It's ludicrous. Especially their connective tissue is just not ready for it. That's why in my book, The Power Program, I talk about an extension connection series before you go into heavy exercise for 8 to 10 weeks, just to condition your connective tissue so you don't get a pulled shoulder, a pulled knee, a wrist, an elbow, neck, lower back going out when you start to lift a fairly substantial weight. And of necessity, you have to do a higher rep range in order to carry out this sort of work, to condition yourself to something heavier. But there is absolutely no doubt that the body can exert its maximum effort only for a very short time. In fact, the stored ATP in the muscles allows you approximately 5 seconds of maximum work. And that, in that 5 seconds, you might do 2 or 3 repetitions. If you're very fast, probably 2 repetitions. And 2 repetitions would be the maximum way to grow the body. But it would be very dangerous because you're all the time working near your maximum. So we have to compromise. And from a number of trainers who are friends of mine, such as Paul Check and Charles Poliquin, and from the research literature, we come out with approximately 5 repetitions as the compromise ideal for heavyweight training. Now you can go less than that as you get more conditioned. In fact, for the Olympic weightlifters that I've worked with, mostly do 1 to 2 repetitions. I mean, they lift all the time, but they are in superb condition, absolutely superb condition. You don't try that at home.
So power training liberates more value, but there's more risk involved.
Right.
This is where the technique becomes...
This is where the periodization comes in.
Exactly.
So that you have to do a period of conditioning of the connective tissue. Then you have to do a period of strengthening, what we call the strength stabilization program cycle, where you strengthen smaller groups of muscles before you move on to what you might call a power cycle, which builds certainly a great deal of power using full body exercises. There's full body exercises in a person not properly trained up to them are disastrous. When I see young kids going into the school gym, and the first thing that the coach wants them to do is the power exercises that he sees power athletes do, such as the squat, the deadlift, and the high pull. They are disastrous for young people because their bodies are just not ready for it.
So it's really important to precondition oneself and utilize education and information.
Yes, and that's why your course is so important, so that people take the steps along the right way. The other thing about weight training and conditioning is that we live in this instant coffee, instant mashed potato society that wants a quick response. If they don't see a huge change in 4 weeks, then they tend to say, oh, well, it isn't working for me. Well, the thing that they don't understand is the physiological dynamics of growth in the body. It takes approximately 2 weeks for your skin to turn over. It takes approximately 3 months for your blood to turn over once. And no matter what you do, you have to wait on nature for that. And for most of the proteins in your muscles to turn over, so you get new, better, stronger proteins growing, it takes 6 months. So the shortest period you could ever hope to get any significant change in your body is about 6 months. But most people don't think that, and of course, trying to get the business, there are all these courses out there saying, lose 20 pounds of fat and gain 15 pounds of muscle in 30 days. And it's nonsense. Every single one of them is nonsense. And all the photographs are nonsense that come with them. I can retouch photographs and make them look like anything on my computer, and I'm not an expert in it at all. Experts can make photographs look any way they want.
So this is an example of where education provides you with some kind of foundation to draw upon so that you can differentiate the truth between the hype and understand that there's a lot of hype in advertising and in marketing that's being used to attract people to various products which may or may not be of any value.
Right, and of course it goes on everywhere, but let's take it from a point of view and say, okay, I don't know anything at all about, making a video. Now, if you read the hype, it says you can make videos, buy this laptop and buy this and buy that, and you can make videos. But anyone with any sense at all realizes that if you're going to make videos, you go to school, and you go to school for a couple of years to learn the basics. Now, yet we still have this mistaken idea that if you want a new body, you just go to the gym and you work out for 4 or 6 weeks and you should have it. It doesn't work that way. You go to school. You go, and at the end of a year, you will see a significant difference. At the end of 2 years, you'll see quite a reasonable body coming to shape, even if you haven't done any exercise for 30 years. But anything less than that, you're fooling yourself.
You've written an excellent book called The Power Program, and it's actually in part 2 of my education program. What do you mean by the new power program?
Previously, much of resistance exercise grew out of bodybuilding. And bodybuilding was concerned with developing the exterior showy muscles so they look good. Now, there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want to do, but most people are concerned with producing a functional body so that when they go skiing, at the end of the day, they're not exhausted and they're not aching and paining in every joint. Or when they go chop firewood or lift things, they don't get a sore back. That's what most people want out of their exercise. They want a body that functions well. And functional exercise, which has come to be known through the work of Paul Check, what we subscribe to also, develops the body from the inside out. For example, it's no use developing the big showy muscles, the deltoids and the shoulders, if the rotator cuff muscles, which are underneath and small, but actually attach the humerus, the upper bone of the arm to the shoulder socket, if those are not strong, it's absolutely useless having strong deltoids, because all they'll do is separate your shoulder all the time.
So this is why we see so many shoulder injuries and rotator cuff injuries.
Oh, yes. Rotator cuff is one of my prime targets in the power program, because so many athletes suffer from it. Not only athletes, but so many people. Sore shoulders, sore necks, sore upper backs, all primarily come from having insufficient strength in the rotator cuff. And, of course, all the rotator cuff muscles attach to the scapula, and therefore you've got to have sufficient strength in the muscles that hold the scapula, the shoulder blade that is, to the back instead of winging it out. Once you see a shoulder blade winging out, you know that the person's in trouble.
How does one get to these rotator cuff muscles? What types of exercises do you recommend?
Well, you can use dumbbells for a lot of exercise, but we've developed specifically the power program equipment, which is a quad cable, four cable of weighted cable equipment, which will target the shoulders in from every direction. And there's a whole shoulder workout which targets the shoulders from any direction you can think of, and therefore gets all that big complex of muscles that holds the upper body together. But of course, even holding the shoulders together is no use if you haven't developed the muscles that hold up the spine. You can have the strongest legs and the strongest arms, strongest shoulders in the world, but if you don't develop the internal muscles that hold up the spine, then it's all useless, because the spine is what enables you to use these things. And the muscles that hold up the spine, the iliocostalis, the longissimus, the multifidi, and the rotatoris, are not even mentioned in the majority of bodybuilding books. I've never even seen them in a bodybuilding book. And yet they're the major muscles that hold up your back. Without that, your spine would crumple to a pile of bones.
So a lot of people going to the gym copy bodybuilders doing their exercises,
yes,
which then leads to a lot of disablement or insufficient development in terms of symmetry. And as a consequence of overstimulating, say, the chest and shoulders, they end up with the inability to train long term.
Exactly. And I'll give you one very good example of the difference between bodybuilding exercise and functional exercise. You can get, in the National Football League, you get quite a lot of people that are in what's called the 400 club. That is, they can bench press 400 pounds. Now, that's quite a lot of weight. Now, they think, it's still in the mentality that because they can bench press 400 pounds, they're going to push like hell on the field, on the football field. And because a person can do, say, who goes to the gym and says, well, now I'm up to 250 pounds in the bench, I must be getting really strong at pushing people or at pushing things. It's not true, because you push actually when you're standing up with your back, not with your arms. And if your back is weak, as it is with most people who train on benches or sitting or supported, then then you're useless in functional exercise. You are useless out there in the free living environment.
So this approach is excellent for mainstream people that are not necessarily involved in competitive sports, but just for free living, this is an excellent approach that will help keep them from a lot of the disorders that are associated with a lack of fitness.
Yes, that's one of the goals of the Power Program, but I developed it primarily for athletes, because athletes, training the body from the inside out, are much, much stronger, more agile, more coordinated, faster than athletes who train in a bodybuilding fashion.
Well, we're just about out of time. I just want to talk, as we bring the Sport Nutrition Update to a close. Now, you've written a new book. It's called The Sports Nutrition Guide, Minerals, Vitamins, and Antioxidants for Athletes. I know everyone's going to be excited to read this. What actually inspired you to write this new book?
Well, it's primarily the change that has occurred in science, in nutrition science, since I wrote Optimum Sports Nutrition in 1993. There's been a tremendous change, literally a turning of sports nutrition on its head by the discoveries, first of all in physics and second in medicine. And so I tried to incorporate the latest study into this book to show why we have such problems as the female athlete triad of anorexia, amenorrhea, and bone loss. And people, of course, have thought that it was confined to females, but it's not. It occurs in many male athletes too. And I tried to delineate why that occurs and how to correct it. And we've even done this with a number of athletes, including Olympians, who are competing at the next game.
Well, I know your book is going to be released at this keynote event on behalf of the Canadian Health Food Association. Michael, it's just been absolutely wonderful having you as my first guest, and who else but the very best in the world. For people who want information about the Colgan Chronicles, your newsletter, who want to buy your books, is there a website? Is there a number they can call for additional information?
Sure. The website is www.colganinstitute.com. That's it. Colganinstitute, one word, .com.
Very good. And once again, Michael, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is a division of Holly Health Services located in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. For information regarding subscription to SNU and Corey's Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, please visit our website at www.coreyhawley.com. This is Lisa Hawley, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.